Less than a month to go before the clock runs out and contracts between the UAW and the Detroit 3 automakers expire. Talks are continuing pretty much out of the spotlight, and it's a very delicate balance both sides are trying to pull off. Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes is with us now. Daniel, let's start with the fundamental wants and needs of both sides in these talks. First, the automakers.
Well, the automakers got to stay competitive. You know, they went through the very dark times of 2008 and 2009. Two of the three of them went bankrupt, and in the process really lowered their break-even point in North America to the point that during the life of the current contract, the three companies in North America have earned a combined about $70 billion in adjusted profits. That hasn't happened in almost any of our lifetimes. I mean, you'd have to go back to the 60s, early 60s, to see those kinds of numbers. And they had a heck of a lot more market share at the time. So they want to keep their costs down and remain competitive with the foreign competitors operating in the United States. And they're not even where they need to be. So I think they're going to be dragging their feet a little bit on base wage increases and sweetening to health care, because health care is consuming, yet again, is consuming a big chunk of cash for them, and they want to get their arms around it.
And the UAW?
Start with base wage increases, I think, for both the so-called legacy workers and also for the second-tier workers who started getting hired after the 2007 agreement, and they're looking for some base wage increases. More for the second tier, I think. They want to get a little bigger chunk for them and maybe a little less for the legacy guys. But I don't think you get this deal ratified without the base wage increases. And I think the second thing is you don't get this deal ratified unless some of these things that are outstanding right now about products and plants and moving to Mexico or bringing vehicles in from China are resolved. And if they're not resolved before a contract is put out for ratification, I think there's a good chance you don't get ratification at least one automaker.
Which one?
Ford would be the top candidate. And the reason I say that is Ford mystified a lot of people, including top union officials, when they confirmed that they were going to be discontinuing production of the Ford Focus and the C-Max and other hybrids at Michigan Assembly in Wayne, just west of Detroit, in advance of the talks. And the speculation that no one has really, at Ford, has really tried to tamp down is that those products are going to be built in Mexico. So that's a classic, they're shipping production to Mexico. And Donald Trump, on the stump, in the presidential stump, has been hammering Ford. He did it again last night up in New Hampshire, that they're moving to Mexico. I think there's every expectation that as part of this negotiation that Ford will announce and confirm that it is bringing another product into Michigan Assembly, and then not a single person is going to lose their job or probably miss a day of work because of the way these things work. But unless that gets confirmed, I think the UAW leadership has a very difficult time of getting a Ford-UAW deal ratified.
And Daniel, you note in your column in today's Detroit News, for the union, this isn't just the dollars and cents of it, it's image, it's perception.
Yeah, this is a very delicate time for the UAW and President Dennis Williams. They're on the other side of what has been a real roaring back of Detroit financially and from a product perspective. And a lot of people who know product really well will tell you they're building the best product these companies have ever built, not necessarily across the board in every segment, but really good stuff. And I think the union is in a difficult position for a few reasons. One is, yes, there's no question the companies have made a lot of money. How can they extract and reach a deal that enables these companies to continue to make money, but also rewards the workers in a way that makes sense? The other thing is, if they do get into a situation where they can't ratify a deal, or perhaps there is a strike of some magnitude. I'm not talking about a one-day wildcat strike. I'm talking about something that lasts a couple of weeks or more. You know, what implications does that have for the union and its attempt to organize auto plants in the South? They're currently non-union. They've gotten some inroads with the Volkswagen in Chattanooga. They're trying in some other places. Now, there is an argument in the union that says, well, if we take on one of these companies and we're really successful, that could help our organizing efforts. Well, I suppose in theory that's true. But I think more likely is that whatever comes out of something like that, it's going to be a half of the loaf kind of thing. So, you know, that might be a risk. So I think they've got several risks in that regard. And finally, you know, under President Williams, they're really trying to project an air of being a mature industrial organization that understands global competition and understands that unions have a role to play in helping companies be competitive, not that they can just stand on the sidelines and demand more like traditionally they used to with a caricature of them in the past. And if things get off the rails, I think that that image takes a real hit.
Well, you mentioned Dennis Williams. You've got President Williams captaining the UAW ship through the first national contract talks. So what are your impressions as you watch things unfold?
He's unlike any UAW president I've seen in my career covering this. And I go back to the 96 national contract talks when Steve Jokic, I believe, was running the show. Dennis Williams, you know, did not come up through the auto side of the UAW. He came up through the agriculture, the farm implement side. He's been on the board of Navistar for about 10 years. So he's been in the room, seen how boards of directors evaluate issues, evaluate talent, evaluate problems, evaluate strategy, how they make mistakes, how they react to mistakes. And I think he's bringing, or I know he is, he's bringing a much more business-like mindset to the institution of the union in terms of he's creating financial goals for the regions and how they operate. He's created training systems for the staff so they can better serve members and be more efficient. He's restructured the organization so it can be more efficient and more financially stable. So he's done a lot of things that his predecessors wouldn't even have attempted. And I think you said at the outset that this has kind of been a low-key affair, and you're absolutely right. You know, I was gone for a couple of weeks, and I didn't remember seeing a single auto talk story while I was gone. And I asked some of my colleagues, and they said, no, it's really, really been quiet. And that's very unusual, you know, 4 weeks out. Usually there are things that are starting to percolate, and people are starting to leak things, and kind of which then puts pressure on the other side and stuff like that. We're not seeing that, and I think that's an indication of the way he operates. Now, we'll see. This is his first national contract talks, but we'll see how it unfolds going forward.
Detroit News business columnist Daniel Howes. As always, thanks so much, Daniel.
Thank you.